F4.
Number 2A.
Well, I just want to repeat quickly what we were thinking yesterday. In Christian Science, we go out from the one divine infinite principle. All the reasoning that has to be done goes out from principle and not from phenomena. So always turn away from the phenomena, go back to the one principle and reason from that divine principle, the infinite one. That one which is all, is the one, is the only. And then from that to see that this infinite principle is not just the center, but that it is the center and circumference of its own being. So that we can see that the center and the circumference is one, and they are not two different realities. One reality which is principle, the other reality which is the universe of ideas. It's just one. Principle and idea is one, and not principle and idea are one. So principle and idea is, it's a singular, is one, Mrs. Eddy says, and this one is God. So God stands for both, for principle and the infinite way and means how principle expresses itself infinitely, individually. Now, when we see that, then we have no sense of something outside. There doesn't exist something outside. So all our reasoning is from principle and within principle. And that within principle is the content of that principle. So that principle is not just an empty shell, but that it contains within itself the infinite ideas of how principle manifests itself, of how principle reveals itself, but it's always revealing itself to itself in the first place. It's always staying within. There is no outside. This is the great point that we have to get hold of this week, that there is nothing outside and that therefore everything is within, so that we can see that only as we go out from the divine mind and not from a mind that is outside the divine mind, like the human mind or mortal mind, only if we go out from the one mind we can reason really scientifically. Now, this infinite cannot be understood as the whole. We have seen, or we would be bigger than the whole. So how can we get hold of the infinite content of this one infinite principle? And the only way that mankind knows it today is through science. Not through magic, not through mysticism, but through science. Because science, well, is that which has been revealed only a few centuries ago as that wonderful instrument that enables us to reduce the infinite to simplicity without losing anything of the infinite. This is a marvel by itself. And we know that from our schooling, from arithmetic, from everything else, that the moment we have infinite expression and manifestations, we should be able through science to reduce it to simplicity. What is that simplicity? That simplicity is a system. So Mrs. Eddy says, I have reduced divine metaphysics to a system. Because what is a system? A system consists of categories that blend. Therefore, fundamental to a system are categories. And when we have the categories of a discipline, then we can see how these categories combine and blend, and we get the laws and rules of this system. Therefore, Mrs. Eddy has given us a system, and that system, she says, I build on the categories of divine mind. So she does not accept any categories that come from the human mind, from human intelligence, and from human thinking. There are all categories of God, of the infinite, the categories of mind. So as it says, the categories of Christian Science rest entirely on the divine mind. Now, we can see, therefore, in order to understand the infinite principle and its infinite ideas, we have to know the categories of being and the way these categories of being are linked together, are blending together, are related together. So that then we have categories and we blend them together. This gives a whole system, and a holistic system, and therefore we have the method of how to calculate the whole. Now, this is then the important point for this week. I touched on it yesterday just at the end quickly, namely, if there is one principle of the universe, and this one principle of the universe interprets itself through its own system, which is through its own categories, then the symbolization of that principle is secondary, is very secondary. If I have the principle that 2 and 2 is 4, then it's very secondary if that is symbolized by 2 fishes and 2 fishes equal 4 fishes, or 2 bananas and 2 bananas equal 4 bananas. The fishes and the bananas are not important, not at all. What is important is the categories, the 2 plus 2 equal 4. Now, in the text, we have the symbols. The text of the Bible, of the textbook, gives symbols. They are symbolizing reality. They are not reality itself. So if we take the text of the Bible, like we will do this week, like the Gospel of John, we must realize that we read the symbols, and that not the symbols are really the thing that is important, but that the categories that lie behind the symbols are important. So that, text interpretation is interpreting not symbols, but is interpreting the system that lies behind the symbols. So this is scientific text interpretation, to find behind the Gospel of John the structure of the Gospel, the scientific structure of the Gospel, and see what that means. The way he symbolizes it is secondary, because it could also be symbolized differently through different symbols, as long as the structure is kept intact. Okay, this is the main point that we want to bring out this week, that we are investigating how the Gospel of John is presenting the science of God through the categories of God, through the ontological categories of God, and how he can take those few categories of God and relate them to each other, reflect each other, blend them with each other, and so give us every time a completely new calculus, a completely new computation of these fundamental categories. And we know that those categories, as Mrs. Eddy has given them, are shown forth by using capitalized terms. So the capitalized terms in Mrs. Eddy's writings symbolize the great three categories of being, and therefore also introduces the language of spirit. It's another language, because the moment Mrs. Eddy capitalizes a term, she means something very different than when that term is not capitalized. Therefore takes the language, the English language, out of it, of the English language, and gives to it a completely new spiritual meaning. And so we are introduced into the language of spirit through the capitalized terms. Yes, This is, in short, what I tried to convey yesterday. And now we go a step further. We come now in our study material still on page 3, where we have the structural elements. We come to Roman 2, namely to the three main categories of the one being. Now, these main categories are well known to you, so I don't have to go into it in detail, but in order to warm up our thought to the Gospel of John, I just want to pinpoint those three categories so that we have a present sense of them. The first point is the category which is called the nature of the one being. We know them as the seven synonymous terms for God. Now, the seven synonymous terms for God are not introduced at once in the textbook, nor are they introduced in John's Gospel at once, because the textbook as well as the Bible shows that thought has first to be aligned to the seven synonymous terms, that human thought must be somehow brought in line with the nature of God, so that we have that mind which is God. The Bible therefore starts with the 7 days of creation. And Mrs. Eddy also, when she has that second part, the key to the scripture, she also starts with Genesis, where she explains the 7 days of creation. So the very first inkling we get of the Infinite One is that the Infinite One translates itself and reveals itself first to the unenlightened human thought by impressing the seventh synonymous term on human, unillumined thought. Therefore, the days of creation are a category or a subcategory by itself of the seven synonymous terms, and they act on the human mind in order to bring the human mind out of itself and makes the human mind ready to accept really the divine mind. So, the days of creation, as you know, start with that statement that that in the beginning, and I want you to make a mental note, because this is, though it seems to be not important, it becomes then very important later on. In the beginning, God created heaven and earth. And then it goes on and says, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. Now, darkness is what? It's called chaos, but chaos is what? Chaos is order. Chaos is order of a higher level. There is no such a thing in being as chaos, because God is always order, but to the human mind, because we don't understand the order of being, we call sometimes the higher orders chaos, because we can't see the order in chaos. Now, we know how today this is a great subject for the physicists, that they can begin to see that there exists no chaos, quite differently. They show really that out of chaos comes order, and that chaos is nothing else but the higher order, a law of a higher order. So what Genesis wants to say is that the Spirit of God moved upon the waters of the deep, of that which is darkness, which is so-called chaotic, in order to show that there is no chaos, in order to show that there is order in what we call chaos, is from the divine standpoint not chaos, but higher order. Think of the book of Brigham Young that is called Order Out of Chaos. So we have to find out more and more that we get rid of that dualistic thinking that we have within ourselves, which always has either chaos or order. There doesn't exist such a thing as chaos. There only exists order, but order has many levels of altitude, and so we just have to see that we are beginning to see the higher orders. Then that which is called chaos or discord is just waning away, just discarded. So through the 7 days of creation, that higher order of the seven synonymous term, which has order, it's the word order, has such an impact on human thought, on the darkness, that it lifts us out of that darkness into the order of the seven synonymous terms. That's the deeper meaning of the 7 days of creation, that God translates itself. The seven synonymous terms translate themselves to human thought, to unenlightened human thought, which is thinking in chaotic ways and says, let there be order, let there be a way in the wilderness, like John the Baptist was showing, that he was bringing a way, make straight the way in the wilderness. So that in that wilderness of chaotic thinking is brought into it a line of reasoning that is divine, that is ordered. That's the days of creation. So I don't have to say much about the 7 days of creation. There is a vast literature on the 7 days of creation, and you are not beginners in this science of Christian Science, and therefore I expect that you know the meaning, the spiritual meaning, the metaphysical meaning of the 7 days of creation. So I just want to run quickly through it as concentrated as possible so as not to lose too much time. But still to see that there is a function in those 7 days of creation, which then must be seen as to be very different from other orders which I will talk about later on. So here is the great order of the 7 days of creation, of the seven synonymous term, coming to the human mind, to the unenlightened human mind, with the power of the Christ idea, with the Christ power, and says to the darkness upon the face of the deep, and says to that which the human mind calls chaos, and says, no, 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 there is no chaos. That's not true. I show you that it is not true, and I lead you gently out of that belief. And so it says in the first day, let there be light, as meaning, let there be now intelligent spiritual thought, and not material thinking and human thinking. Let there be, now let us turn to the one mind, to the one light, to the intelligence light. The second day says, then if you turn to that, then let there be a firmament, let there be a line of separation, then you see what is divine and what is not divine, what is real and what is not real. Only then you can make the distinction between reality and unreality. Only then when the light says, let there be light, the second day can develop that light, unfold that light, always stronger and stronger and stronger. So that finally that light, as it develops in the second day, gathers the quality of the third day. Let there be the dry land, the firm land, that which is secure, on which you can stand, on which we can rely, so that every thought that starts with let there be light and begins to be loved by us and be admired by us and to be pondered by us in spirit, so that it can develop and develop, finally gathers identity, security, definiteness, so that you can rely on it, so that you know it. It really crystallizes in your thought so that it is unmistakable in your thought. That the third day of creation. And the moment you have then a sense, oh yes, all the divine thought crystallized to firm identities, to clear identities, you ask yourself, but are these infinite identities of being just scattered around in the universe? Or have they any relationship with each other? So the fourth day must come in, the fourth day of principle that says, no, all these identified ideas are related to each other into one principle, within one great system of principle, and are governed from one principle. They are not isolated ideas. They are always ideas that have behind themselves the authority of the divine infinite principle. And this is the turning point in your consciousness. This is the turning point where you say, oh, golly, 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 I have found a new basis. I have found principle as my basis from which I go out. I don't have to turn anymore to anything else but the divine principle, and that lifts you right out of any limited earthbound thinking. That's the fifth day. That's the fifth day of the birds and the fowls that fly above the earth, that are no more earthbound, they are no more human bound, they are no more materially bound, they are no more worldly bound, they are bound to principle, and therefore in the fifth day they can fly above every limitation into the open firmament of heaven. It's open, it's wide, there is no limits anymore, so the fifth day is the day of multiplication, of exaltation, and you will feel free from every human limitation. That's the fifth day. In that day of multiplication, exaltation, be above the limits of human thinking, in the freedom of the realm of ideas governed by one principle. As we begin to see that, we feel that these ideas that come from principle and are actually governed by principle must be ideas of the one God. So that one begins to feel, well, all what I'm thinking is not from me, it has not come from the human mind upward to the divine mind, but is actually from God. And so we come to the sixth day, the day of where God says, let us make man. Let us is life, truth, and love. Let life, truth, and love make man in our image and likeness. Namely, let life, truth, and love have a universe that is like life, truth, and love. So that it's absolutely in correspondence, coincident with life, truth, and love. And therefore we begin to feel something about man having a divine consciousness and not having a human consciousness which has to be raised and raised through the first 5 days to the point where it is exalted, but where we find that from everlasting to everlasting, truth has always known itself. That truth is conscious of itself as its own truth, as the infinite truth, and to that consciousness we give the term man. It would be nice if we could have given to that consciousness another term, so that we would not be sidetracked by thinking about man as a mortal or about the mortal as being man. So let's see that at this point we actually arrive at the climax of creation with the sixth day, where we see that there is no other creation going on but what truth knows about itself. So that we find finally our rest at the seventh day, where we feel at rest, where we feel at peace, where we don't feel we have to attain anymore anything. That we don't have to get somewhere anymore. We have arrived. That's the seventh day of creation. It's no more a day of creation. It's a seventh day of rest, where the approaching sense which we have And each one of us has that approaching sense that we want to approach God, as if we would be outside of God, which is a false premise, naturally. So that we find more and more that we have gone away, which has led us away from the false sense that we are outside of God and have to get nearer and nearer to God, to the point where we begin to feel that God knows us. Not we knowing God, but that God knows us. That we don't know, that we don't need to know mind, but that mind knows us. And then we have touched somehow the seventh day of creation. At that point, Mrs. Eddy makes a terrific statement. The end of the seventh day. And I want to read you this statement, though you know it. Anyway, you should know it, which you know, but which is so important in order to understand the Gospel of John. That's the reason why I read it. She makes a statement at the end of the seventh day that she says, the numerals of infinity. Now, this is the term, the numerals of infinity. It's a terminology which we have to know and which will go right through our week's work. She says, the numerals of infinity called 7 days. She says, they are only called 7 days. They are not 7 days. Can you see here? She makes a very definite statement. They are only called that way. They are not 7 days. They are numerals of infinity. Days, seven, is a finite. Here we have the opposite of finiteness, namely infinite. So they are the numerals of infinity called 7 days. But they can never be reckoned according to the calendar of time. They have no time sense in it. These days will appear when, as mortality disappears, and they will reveal what? Eternity. So you have time and eternity. They will reveal what? Newness of life, the constant newness of life, in which all sense of error forever disappears. It's out. The outside is out, so to say. There is no more an outside, no more a mortality to be taken into consideration when we have gone through the 7 days and have reached the seventh day of rest, in which all sense of error disappears forever. And now what happens? And thought accepts the divine infinite calculus. The divine infinite calculus. So thought accepts it. It is as if you can't help it. Thought, when it has reached the seventh day, can't help to accept something very different than the days of creation, namely the divine infinite calculus.